Welcome to Indie Newswire, a weekly review of breaking news published on independent media center Newswires from all over the world.
Free Radio Santa Cruz, welcome to the Indie Newswire. Today is the 17th of October. News from Mexico and Puerto Rico, from Santa Cruz, and from independent media centers worldwide. All this plus Joe Barnt and Sima Kenyatta discussing tomorrow's community conference on overcoming racism. Stay tuned. Free Radio 101.1 FM. From weeklynewsupdate.blogspot.com, the teachers' union in Puerto Rico is voting. It's, of course, a phony election. It excludes the FMPR from the ballot. SEIU and the government-backed SPM attempts a takeover through the plebiscite. The FMPR was disqualified from the ballot for its refusal to ban the teachers' right to strike. Listeners to this show have heard a little bit about this, specifically SEIU's involvement in this takeover. But again, I will read from Weekly News Update on the Americas here, which is weeklynewsupdate.blogspot.com. As of October 7th, Puerto Rico's teachers have been voting for a week on whether the Puerto Rican Teachers Union, the SPM, should represent them. The island's 40,000 teachers were previously represented by the 42-year-old FMPR, the Teachers Federation of Puerto Rico. But the Labor Relations Commission excluded the FMPR from running in this new election, even though 12,000 teachers already endorsed the union as their bargaining agent. Earlier this year, Governor Aníbal Acevedo Vilas' administration withdrew the union's certification because of its refusal to accept a ban on strikes by public employees. The FMPR mounted a militant 10-day strike in late February and early March over wages, classroom strike, and health issues, winning several key demands. The FMPR called on its supporters to vote against SPM representation. President Rafael Feliciano said on October 7th that the union's polls showed the no vote winning broadly in several districts. He said the no was narrowly ahead in several others, tied in others, so it's a close vote. SPM director Aida Diaz called Feliciano a Pinocchio. The voting is to continue until October 16th. 34,285 teachers are eligible to cast their ballots in 89 polling places. The SPM is affiliated with the Teachers Association and the U.S.-based SEIU, Service Employee International Union. And on October 6th press conference in New York, activists from the local FMPR support committee charged the SEIU and its vice president, Dennis Rivera, had made an alliance with Governor Villa and the Popular Democratic Party to raid the FMPR and take over the union. According to the Puerto Rico Daily Primera Hora, SEIU leaders have said winning over the Puerto Rican teachers is part of a strategy to expand the SEIU into the rest of Latin America. So that vote is ongoing, but it's, of course, a fixed vote. The main, I didn't realize it was a 42-year-old teachers union, and a 42-year-old militant teachers union has been excluded from the voting. So it's not an option for teachers. And they were cast off of the ballot again because of the union's refusal to accept a ban on teachers' right to strike. Also from the same spot, Weekly News Update. There were large operations by federal and local Mexican police on October 7th, 8th, and 9th. Photos and information from the Morelos teacher strike. Last night at the Teaching Rebellion book talk and discussion, there's one at the bike church in the evening and one at UCSC during the day. A lot of parallels were drawn between the teacher struggle in Oaxaca and the recent repression in Morelos, which is two states to the north. The maestros de Morelos have been fighting a privatization attempt and were brutally repressed by mixed agencies, but especially the PFP, Federal Preventative Police, on October 7th, 8th, and 9th. Again, listeners to this show know the PFP is basically a federal police agency that has turned into the political arm of executive repression. It's an army at the it's what's happening in the states, but it's a militarized police force that is charged with putting down strikes at mines, Cananea, for example, charged with restoring law and order to states like Oaxaca, where the governing the officers in charge have been evicted, had been kicked out, and the police have been kicked out. The PFP restores order there. They were the police force that attacked brutally throughout Mexico. And on October 7th and 8th and 9th, several large operations by federal and local Mexican police broke up protests by striking teachers and their supporters in Morelos State, south of Mexico City, leaving dozens detained or injured. Morelos teachers have been on strike since August 13th to protest the Alliance for Quality Education, ACE, a national plan promoted by Mexican President Felipe Calderon and National Teachers Union head Elba Esther Gordillo Morales. I'm reading from weeklynewsupdate.blogspot.com. On October 7th, about 70 Morelos police agents used tear gas and nightsticks to break up a protest by some 200 teachers and residents of the Tres Marias community who were blocking a highway as part of statewide day of action. About 20 people were injured and several were detained. Meanwhile, about 700 protesters blocked the nearby Mexico State Cuernavaca highway for 7 hours. Although the state police were reinforced with 400 agents from the PFP, officials decided to end the blockade through negotiations, and the protesters finally left when officials agreed to release the detained activists. That's from La Jornada. On October 8th, 1,000 PFP agents and state police broke up a roadblock that residents and parents had maintained since October 13th. Maybe the year before? Maybe September? On the Cuautla Puebla highway at the community of Amayuca near the border with Puebla State. The protesters were members of the local group called the Union of Towns in the Eastern Zone. The police operation included 6 helicopters from which agents launched tear gas grenades at the crowd. The protesters held out for an hour, sometimes attacking the agents with rocks, clubs, fireworks, and Molotov cocktails. A total of 49 people were arrested, 20 injured, cars were damaged, a tractor trailer was set on fire. The agents pursued the protesters into Amayuca, where they carried out house-to-house searches, beating protesters as they arrested them. Also from La Jornada. Also on October 8th, police tried to end a road blockade at the highway at Xocotla, Puente de Ixtla municipality in the south of the state. Residents had been blocking the road since September 29th. The operation failed to dislodge the protesters, who captured 4 agents and released them later. The police returned in the early morning of October 9th, but left when they didn't find any protesters. In this operation, the PFP and state police were backed up by hundreds of soldiers in armored vehicles and Hummer trucks. The protesters resumed the blockade later in the morning. In the afternoon, an operation of some 2,000 security forces finally broke up the protest after a 2-hour battle, which left 10 injured, 16 protesters arrested, and several cars damaged. Negotiations were continuing between the teachers and officials as of October 10th. But the state has suspended payment to the striking teachers and started hiring replacement scabs. Officials said they were working every day so that the situation wouldn't escalate to the sort of uprising sparked by a teacher strike in neighboring Oaxaca in 2006. You're tuned to the Indy Newswire on Free Radio Santa Cruz. The articles are available at weeklynewsupdate.blogspot.com, but the photos of the repression in Morelos are collected at a blog called angrywhitekid.blogs.com. The Angry White Kid is apparently down in southern Mexico, has been reporting extensively about specifically repression in Oaxaca. And there's a post of of photos that are pretty incredible. You see the Hummers, you see the helicopters, you see the tear gas, and you see the extremely militarized police. And you see these things and you understand what it is exactly we're talking about when Plan Mexico passes. The U.S. Congress and military aid is flowing from the U.S. south of the border into Mexico. If you are at all unsure about what that means and how the Mexican government is using those funds, check out the blog at angrywhitekid.blogs.com and see. Not from 2006, not from Chiapas and the Zapatistas, but from the teacher strike in Morelos just last week. These photos are insane. They're reminiscent, certainly, of Oaxaca, but it looks like they got new equipment since then, is my point. And it's just really interesting to see some new uniforms and some new gear, some new toys, and see what Mexican stormtroopers look like these days. Now, also on that site, Angry White Kids blog, there's an update posted today. So this is breaking news from Mexico. At least 270 arrest warrants have been issued for activists in Oaxaca. Stay tuned. Things may be getting even more serious very quickly. Thursday afternoon, at least 5 participants in the social movement here in Oaxaca were arrested. At least 2 were arrested for the murder of Brad Will, a crime clearly committed by government-sponsored paramilitaries. Currently, it's unclear if all of the arrests are related to Will's murder or if they represent a broader crackdown on the social movement. There are names here of the 5 arrested: Octavio Perez Perez, Lirio Lopez, Miguel Lopez, Guadalupe is all the information on that particular gentleman, and Juan Manuel Martinez Moreno. Activists here first learned of the detention of Juan and joined his family this evening, last night, at the penitentiary, the central penitentiary at Santa Maria in Oaxaca. Juan's mother and wife have not been allowed to see him. Later, it was learned 4 others had been detained, and a plantón is planned at the penal prison beginning at 9 a.m. today. So that is in progress. And again, the repression continues, of course. The 5 arrested are movement supporters, of course, not the cops and politicians that Brad himself photographed shooting that day last October. 2 Octobers ago. Goodness. So I'm going to play some more local news here, but those of you who have been keeping updated on Plan Mexico, on repression in Oaxaca specifically, but all over the nation, to the south here, there's been an escalation just in the last couple of days. I want to read one more statement, actually, with regards to that, and then we'll hear some local news. And of course, I want to remind folks that a little later in the show, we'll be speaking with Joe Barnt and Simba Kenyatta, discussing tomorrow's community conference on overcoming racism. We'll talk about that in just a minute. This is the Janica denunciation. It was written or released October 5th. And it's a communique that is signed by Noel Cruz, Joventino Cruz, Abraham Ramirez Vasquez. To the social organizations, to the unions, to the NGOs in defense of human rights, to the international organizations, and to the peoples of Mexico. Please accept warm greetings from the San Pedro Pochutla Regional Prison on behalf of Noel Garcia Cruz, Joventino Garcia Cruz, and Abraham Ramirez Vasquez of the Committee for the Defense of Indigenous Rights and the Magonista Zapatista Alliance. Once again, we want to let you know that instead of resolving our problems, the just demands of our organizations, and our demand for a decent life, the tyrant Ulysses Ruiz Ortiz has responded with oppression. He's holding us in terribly unhealthy conditions, thereby trampling on our constitutional rights. In spite of our constant denunciation of the situation, the murderer has turned a deaf ear to our petition. He keeps us under constant surveillance, using other inmates to do his dirty work and placing us in a critical situation. He thinks he will be able to humiliate us with his threats. That will never happen. 3 months from now, We will have spent 4 years behind bars without having committed a single crime. And we can tell you that with every passing day, we feel stronger and more certain that we will never desist in our struggle. Our just demands are non-negotiable. The tyrants who now rule our country are dragging it to the very edge of chaos. Every day there are fewer jobs. Every day there is less support of the countryside. They continue to privatize our beaches and are using all means possible to privatize Pemex, the petroleum company. Their projects of ethnocide are well underway, aimed at doing away with our ethnic groups and our culture, dividing our peoples, and profiting from our misery. We indigenous people are a stumbling block for the state. That's why they don't think twice about ordering the death of our brothers and sisters or sending them to jail to stop our organizational process. We will continue to denounce the injustice that our brothers and sisters suffer in our country and in our state. We will continue to demand a democratic country. We will continue to demand justice for our APO members who have been killed and disappeared. We will continue to demand justice for our indigenous peoples and to the right to a life of dignity. We demand respect for our autonomy as indigenous peoples. We will continue to seek peace, but peace with justice. We will hold firm in our struggles and not take one step backwards. From San Pedro Pochutla Regional Prison, signed Oaxaca, October 5th, 2008.
On the night after Columbus Day, a military recruiting center in Santa Cruz, California, was attacked by resistance fighters. Here is their communique. On the night after Columbus Day, 2008, we vandalized 11 windows at the Air Force, Army, Navy, and Marine Recruiting Center in Santa Cruz County with a paint and acid mix. The U.S. government has always waged a war of extermination against land-based ways of life in order to impose capitalist exploitation of the earth and its peoples. For 516 years, they and their predecessors have been met with resistance. Neither law enforcement nor the military can ever defeat our struggle. To the land and all indigenous peoples devastated by the U.S. government, we apologize for leaving this building standing.
Gotta love WSQT Guerrilla Radio. Never short on the hyperbole. That was posted on Indie Bay. There's all kinds of good stuff on Indie Bay these days. It's been a little slow of late, but pretty soon this show will be posted to Indie Bay. So I'm going to play a song for you real quick. It's called Horoscope. It's by My Flag Is On Fire. And pretty shortly we will be talking about tomorrow's conference on racism at Cabrillo College. But for those of you who just need the info, Saturday, October 18th, tomorrow from 9:30 a.m. to 3. It's free. Child care will be provided. There's a free lunch. It's at the Cabrillo Horticultural Building, 6500 Soquel Drive in Aptos. Speakers, breakout groups, bring your ideas and your thoughts. Sponsored by the Coalition for a Countywide Community Dialogue on Race, Poverty, Justice, and Equality. Stay tuned. Freak Radio 101.1 FM. Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM. So, I would recommend looking at indiemedia.us for some more information about all the wonderful things going around this country, as opposed to turning on the TV and hearing about all the terrible things that happen in this country. I just hope you're making your preparations, building community. We're going to need each other coming up here. On the topic of working together, building community, the Social Forum of the Americas happened last week in Guatemala. It finished up on last Sunday. It was going on for a week or so down there. There's a declaration of the assembly to social movements that I'm going to play a little bit later on as part of some Spanish language broadcasting. The world south of the border is organized and organizing. And as the shit hits the fan and the globalized economy crumbles, the globalized resistance careful, y'all. We're going to get left out. Latin America is just going to take over. Who knows? We got to work together. So I'm going to repeat the information and introduce our speakers. The Community Conference on Racism taking place tomorrow is the latest step in a process. Folks have been working on this for quite some time, of course, working towards solutions at a countywide dialogue event on overcoming racism and building a racially just county. The purpose of this conference is to develop actual working plans to address institutional racism in Santa Cruz County. During the past 4 months, public hearings on racism have been held in 4 different locations. Testimony was given on experiences of racism in 6 areas: police, immigration, education, employment, housing, and healthcare. This conference will address the issues raised at those public hearings. And again, with an eye, the purpose is to develop actual plans to address institutional racism in Santa Cruz County. So this conference tomorrow is an attempt to plot a path to make concrete recommendations, steps, and coalition building that's going to allow people to have a systematic approach to confronting racism in Santa Cruz. In just a few minutes, we'll hear from Joe Barnt. He's the author of Dismantling Racism: The Continuing Challenge to White America, which was first published in 1991. And Simba Kenyatta, who's a community organizer and candidate for Santa Cruz City Council. We talked to him earlier in the summertime about these listening sessions. And it'll be great to have both of them on the show to discuss what's happened since then and what goals are and expectations and what we're gonna look like, what we're going to see tomorrow at Cabrillo College. So stay tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 FM for all that and more. Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM. This is the Indy Newswire. We have a couple of callers on the air here. Simba and Joe, are you both there?
Yep.
Both?
Well, Simba is.
Oh my goodness, we seem to have lost Joe. Let's see here. Well, Simba, how are you doing today?
I'm not sure yet.
Not sure yet?
No.
All right.
I've been between this, the countywide dialogue thing and my city council campaign.
Indeed.
Yeah, I don't have a lot of time to do anything, you know, like sleep, eat, you know, that kind of stuff.
Well, I know you've been busy organizing this conference for sure, and we're gonna try to work out this technical thing and get Joe on the line. So
okay.
If you hold on just one second.
Yeah, sure.
All right. The technical difficulties show, as always, here on Pirate Radio, Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 FM. This is the Indie Newswire, and we've got line two working. Joe Barn, are you there? Still no line two. My goodness. All right. We're going to see if we can work this thing out. Stay tuned. How about now? Joe, are you there? Thank you.
Twilight creeps on in, and the moon's sullen glow's fading. The glow's fading.
Thanks to the technical wizardry of our guests, I believe we have both of our callers on the line here. Yep. Joe and Sibber, can you hear us?
Yes.
Wonderful. Yeah. That's much better. Apologies to you both for the back and forth. So welcome to Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Sure. Thank you for having us.
I was introducing Joe as the author of Dismantling Racism, and that was published in 91, and he let me know that there's an update and a new book that's come out last November, Understanding and Dismantling Racism, a 21st Century Challenge to White America. Joe, welcome to Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Thank you.
And Simba Kenyatta is a community organizer and candidate for Santa Cruz City Council. I talked with Simba earlier in the summer about his work with the coalition and these listening sessions that have been going on countywide, building to the event tomorrow. So listeners to this show have heard a little bit about that process, of course. But if you could recap or restate the idea of building momentum for this conference tomorrow. Simba, what's been going on to prepare for tomorrow's event, and what's the goal tomorrow?
Well, there's been a lot of preparation going on. We're trying to get people to get in one of the six groups that we have that we're trying to deal with, institutionalized racism. Healthcare, education, law enforcement, immigration, employment, and housing. And so we've been going through these different aspects of Santa Cruz life, trying to figure out where the institutional racism lies, if there is any at all, and if it is, try to bring it out. So we've been doing that for months now. They had the listening session in Felton, one in Aptos, one in Santa Cruz City, and one in Watsonville. So we've been taking, I guess you could call it, testimony from people that have been dealing with institutionalized racism. And last night we did a lot of planning, too. So we're really on top of things right now. We may have a problem with showing some of the films that we've accumulated from listening sessions, but tomorrow should be really good because we were trying to take all the information that we've had from the listening sessions and put it together and come up with some solutions to the problems that we uncovered.
Now, you mentioned the focus areas, police and immigration, education and employment, housing and healthcare. If, you know, the folks, of course, who may have attended some of the sessions would be able to speak perhaps to each of these issues. But if each of you could just give a quick summary of issues in each of these areas. So, Joe, could you talk about what's going on in Santa Cruz County with regards to immigration and what kind of testimonies people were giving?
I just want to, before responding exactly to that, add to what Simba's already said, is that the thesis or the theory behind this listening stuff is how important it is to be listening to people and not just working on bureaucratic or other people saying we know what the problem is. So just these listening sessions have been really, really dramatic in the just the idea of people sitting and listening to the victims of racism rather than coming up with our own theories about them.
And I imagine intense and cathartic for the people involved in,
yeah,
and testifying
so.
As well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it is.
But the discipline of government representatives and other organization representatives actually listening,
mm-hmm,
rather than talking is pretty good. And then that brings us to this event, which people will have hopefully gained some kind of sense of involvement of the people. Immigration is certainly one of them, because except for those wonderful demonstrations we had a year and a half ago, that put the voice of the immigrants around immigration issues out there, this nation has just been talking a lot of crap about immigration, pretending like these immigrants do not serve us and are not here doing the stuff that we want to do, and then we have it like this giant vacuum sweeper that sucks workers in from Mexico, and then we punish them for coming. And they've come there because we need them, and they're here because they need them. They contribute to our economy, and we punish them for it. And so the immigration raids, the lack of a just and fair immigration policy, all of that is just a major piece of what institutionalized racism is all about.
And hopefully tomorrow we'll be able to talk about that on a level that and come up with a couple of action plans, which is what our priority is. We want to do action plans. We don't want to just sit around and discuss racism or talk about how bad it is and that stuff. We want to actually find out what the problem is and attack it specifically for that specific program. So whether it's housing or law enforcement, whatever it is, we're going to do our best to do things that actually create something being done, not just discussion. We want to have action.
For example, in the issue of immigration, it is that both Santa Cruz and Watsonville have declared themselves sanctuary cities, but they have not really defined what that means and what that requires. And so one of our action plans could very well be asking the cities of Santa Cruz and Watsonville to get specific. What does it mean we will do, and how will we do it, and when will we do it?
Yeah, what kind of teeth can be put in a what seems like a gesture, a declaration without any kind of practice?
Yep. That's exactly right.
So
you're
Simba,
right.
With regards to law enforcement and police, what kinds of actions? What's come up in these sessions over the last few months?
What do you mean in terms of what people have uncovered, or in terms of what solutions we might come up with?
Well, some of both. I guess to begin with, I want to talk about what the sessions have produced in with regards to each of these six.
Law enforcement is pretty much always the first one, because that's the first contact we have with a lot of bureaucracies. You know, they're the ones that are outside the building. They're the ones that are having face-to-face contact with us. So the police review,
well, there's that.
Law enforcement, boy, that was a Freudian slip. But dealing with law enforcement, we've just uncovered just how people are treated, you know, and a lot of people of color feel like they're treated really badly, whether it's racial profiling or not, which is what started this whole thing. But, you know, that Tony Logical thought that there might have been some instances of racial profiling in Santa Cruz, and everybody got all upset. So we're trying to figure out just exactly how much of this is going on and stuff, and there are people that are really upset because of the way they have to deal with law enforcement or the way law enforcement deals with them. So we've just uncovered a lot of anxiety, a lot of anger, a lot of angst about, you know, about being stopped by police or being hassled or, you know, or having them not protect people. That's one that's come up, too, that people have called and felt like they weren't taken seriously or that they weren't protected.
Joe, with regards to employment, what are some of the issues in Santa Cruz County?
Just want to add quickly to what Simba said.
Of course.
About law enforcement and police, about how critically important both Tony Madrigal, who is on the city council and running for re-election, and and Simba Kenyatta have both been really upfront about this need for dealing with the issue of profiling. And there's denial, and about this issue. And I hope when Tony gets reelected and Simba gets elected to city council, that we're going to have some changes on the Santa Cruz City Council that will be able to deal with this and pretend and stop pretending that it's not happening.
And like I try to keep telling the police department, we're not interested in beating up on any person or organization. We're actually trying to work as a community, as allies, to solve some of these problems.
The area of employment in part overlaps with the immigration issue because now I'm in Watsonville, and we have 75% Latinos in this community, and the issue of not all of them are immigrants, of course. A significant percentage of the population of Mexican Americans in this state were here before white people were here, in terms of their generations past. So it's not just simply an immigration, but the discrimination in employment is just another level in which people discuss the way in which they've been infected and affected by racism. One example of it is I just blocked the name of the where they stand out in front of Home Depot.
The day labor
situation. With the discrimination that people feel just being available for day labor. You know, you have to be punished to be available for day labor when we need them. You know, and so one of the things that there's a lot of testimony about in various places, not just our hearings, but is the discrimination against day laborers and the need for our cities to develop plans so that day laborers will be given a fair shake and given an opportunity to be someplace where they're safe and available to people who need day labor.
Simba, what about schools and education?
Fortunately, we've had one good ally, Michael Watkins, the superintendent of county education, and he's come and testified about what he does and what he thinks goes on in schools and the education part. And that's something we're trying. One of the things we want to do is just see what the books say. What are these history books saying about people of color? Are they saying anything at all about people of color? Then there's the how we're going to do the bilingual people, whether they want to do like total immersion in the language or we've just come along as we've done before in the English as a second language. And the dropout rates among people of color in Santa Cruz, well, actually in the whole United States, is just horrendous. I mean, I think something like, a third of our kids graduate? I'm not sure exactly the statistics, but not even half of our kids graduate. So we need to have some kind of outreach, something to make people feel like they want to go to school, which, considering how schools are made, is going to be a really big problem. Because, you know, I tell people, I think the person that invented the schools and the school hours never saw a child in their life. I mean, because, you know, everything from expecting a 7-year-old to sit still for 6 hours a day to having high school students, they can't even afford to eat lunch sometime. You know, the whole system from bottom to top needs to be dealt with. We would like to, in education, one of the things we came up with was trying to do some form of anti-bias or prejudice reduction training while you're in school.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a discussion about when that should start, too. So some people think high school, some people think, you know, fourth or fifth grade.
Kindergarten?
Yeah, how about starting with kindergarten, all right?
Starting with what?
Kindergarten.
Yeah. You really do. And you can do it, you know, everything has to be age appropriate.
Of course.
So you don't start talking about people getting lynched or anything when you're talking to 4-year-olds. But, you know, you do talk about how you make sure that you treat people equally. That, you know, as a child, your parents have to tell you, you know, that you treat people equally. You don't discriminate.
Now, something in terms of, you mentioned the dropout rate, and something actually we've talked about on the show with other guests at other times is the record keeping. I mean, the reason you couldn't think of a number, and the reason that I can't tell you a number, is that we don't really know. The dropout rate is calculated in such a ridiculous rubric, and so getting that data has been a struggle for other districts and statewide. because people are just passed over. It's not a problem for some people that the rates are so high.
That's right. One of the solutions that probably is going to come out as an action solution tomorrow with regards to that absence of data is the establishment of a website that will publish all of the data of dropout rates, of the percentages, racial percentages of students, professors, teachers, school boards, etc., on every level of all of the school districts in the county, so that people have that data before us so that we can act on it.
So it can be transparent. Because right now, my understanding is that in some areas, you're not counted as a dropout unless you go into the office and say, hey, I'm dropping out.
Yeah, right.
If you just stop showing up, you're just not part of the, it's not part of the calculation.
No.
Joe, if you could discuss.
One other thing about that, Daniel, is as a mark of institutionalized racism in the education system is the representation on our school boards of people of color.
Mm-hmm.
The Pajaro Valley School District, of which I'm a part of here, has 75% Latino students, not one single Latino on the school board.
Hmm.
You know, and even if you said that every member of that school board is really good and has the right intentions, and I think that at least half of them are really right on, but the absence of Latino representation on the decision-making level of our school system is so critical. We have candidates that we support down here in Watsonville, like Lupe Rivas, who's running for the school board. It's not that the person she's running against isn't good, but the fact is that we won't get anywhere until we have representation, significant representation, majority representation of people of color on the boards that make decisions in our county for every level. And that's why it's so important that people to be supported who are like Simba and like Lupe and like Luis Alejo, who is running for city council in Watsonville. The representation of people of color is the most crucial issue about decision making on all of our
Joe, what can you tell us about healthcare in Santa Cruz County and racial components of that?
Well, you know, I've got to really confess to some lacks in regards to that, and even in terms of our process, we were talking about that last night, is that the one area that we've heard the least about in our hearings has been the area of healthcare. And it's not because the problems aren't really significant in healthcare, but we didn't do a good job in communicating with the healthcare folks to come out. So when I respond to that question, I want you to know how incomplete it's going to be. The healthcare in our county matches, as far as I know, to at least what our national averages are. That in every healthcare statistic, that people of color are both in terms of health and in terms of health care, receive less, more lack of health and less of health care and less of quality of health care than do white people.
Man, the surveys they keep saying are actually surprising to the medical profession and to the people doing the survey that it doesn't make any difference how much you make. Your care is still going to be less than a white person. That if you have everything the same, the insurance the same disease, the same everything, a person of color will get less care than a white person, even if all the factors are equal.
As a matter of fact, that every one of these six areas, there's one answer for all of them in some sense, Daniel, and that is that in every way, in every issue, in every institution that you measure, in every six of these areas, what Simba just said is true in every one of them. That the gap between white people and people of color has been basically unchanged since the 60s in terms of results. We've had a whole lot of relationships improve. We've had a whole lot of things tried, but the results are still basically the same, that the gap between white people and people of color are still monumental.
Simba, the last one is housing, and that's one that housing in Santa Cruz is such a huge issue. With regards to the forum and the testimonies that people have given, how is housing impacted by race in Santa Cruz County?
housing, the discrimination in housing sometimes I think is particularly, it's kind of hidden because you don't really know why you did or didn't get a house, you know, because or didn't get rented to. So I personally have had stories, I guess you could say, about renting because where I live right now, my rent taker, I don't call them landlords because there's only one lord of the land and they don't demand rent.
There you go.
So I don't call them landlords, I call them rent takers.
Right on.
Yeah. So anyway, my rent taker told me when he finally, you know, got a house for me and stuff, he said, "Well, you had a hard time finding a place, didn't you?" I said, "Yeah, how do you know?" Yeah. He said, "Well, because I've been a landlord here for almost 50 years," and he said, "and I know from listening to other landlords that they do not like renting to black people." And I almost started crying because it was like somebody actually understands.
You got an honest rent taker.
You know, so it's that bad that when your rent taker tells you that it's bad, you probably should take the word for it. Things are pretty bad. And a lot of things to affect our housing, you know, like our policies about slow growth and no growth, you know, that there are only so many things that can be built, so the prices of rent stay high. So trying to figure out a way around that is really hard. I mean, whether you want to try rent control, which it has never passed in Santa Cruz, even though we're so liberal and everything, it's always failed. It's been brought up like, what, 4 or 5 times, mm-hmm. and every time it fails. So we're trying to figure out just how do you correct housing irregularities or inequalities, because there's no central housing, you know, like law enforcement, you know, you can go to a particular place, particular person. But when you're dealing with housing, mm-hmm. you have to deal with a lot of different agencies, a lot of different people, a lot of different statistics. So bringing up things about housing has been kind of hard. But people have, you know, have talked about how hard it is to make it here, and people discriminating against immigrants, whether they're legal or illegal, you know, but because nobody wants to, they don't want to rent to people of color.
Well, so, in terms of concrete steps forward, I mean, my feeling as an organizer, I've been in this town for a while, is that a solid tenants' rights movement that incorporated racial justice and created and supported sustainable, affordable housing for every single one of us would have a huge lasting effects. But exactly what you said, who do you go to? Who, you know, the police, you can create create a police review board. The police, you can have a policy change or have some kind of change in staffing or some kind of input.
One of the things we want to do is try to redefine affordable housing. Because the way it is right now, affordable housing isn't really. And, you know, you have to be pretty middle class to have affordable housing. If you're poor,
no such thing.
Housing still isn't affordable.
Yeah. Well, one of the
organizations that's working on middle and low income housing in an effective way in the county is a group called COPA, that's based in Watsonville, but it's countywide and goes into Monterey County.
What's COPA stand for?
Community Organization for Power and I forget what the A is.
I forget what the A is too.
But I think that they're doing an effective coalition building job in terms of because even when you have plans for low income housing, then the neighborhood you want to put it in, try and keep it out, not in my backyard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's really important that we be supporting efforts. Not only that this conference tomorrow will be trying to create some new ideas, but also supporting efforts like COPA's that do exist. How do we continue to support good ideas that are happening?
Yeah, not have to reinvent the wheel.
Yeah.
And another thing has to do with if our federal government does come through with plans that have to do with protecting people from foreclosures, we have to make sure that that's applied in our county. We have to make sure, we have to do something to make sure that the people responsible for housing authority in throughout this county are making sure that particularly, once again, people of color who suffer most, Latinos down here in Watsonville have suffered tremendously from this enticement into mortgages that they're now having to face foreclosure on. Mm-hmm. And we have to make sure that whatever is offered from a federal level is implemented on the streets.
So I want as many listeners as possible to turn out tomorrow for the event, of course. So what's it going to look like? What's the agenda? You mentioned Michael Watkins, who's going to be speaking. What can people expect tomorrow at Cabrillo?
A lot of information and a lot of thinking, because we're depending on the community to come up with the answers. Because as a coalition, we came up with some questions and some answers, but the community has to come up with them, not just us. So tomorrow is going to look like at 10 o'clock, I do an introduction and welcome everybody and all that good stuff. And a quarter after, Michael Watkins will give a keynote address for about 15 minutes, and then we're going to talk about the definition of institutionalized racism, because a lot of people, you know, you'll see prejudice going on somewhere, but the actual racism, that the way we're defining it, as I have prejudice plus power, comes out to racism. Because if you don't have any power, you can be prejudiced, but you're going to be racist because you don't control anything. So that's one of our goals, is to have a collective definition of institutionalized racism, so at least we know what we're attacking. So that's going to be, you know, this morning we're going to have breakout sessions in the afternoon where we sit down and deal with each one of these issues. We have different facilitators for each one of these issues, for each one of these categories. So these facilitators will be helping the groups come up with some, with a little more, not testimony, but just a little more feeling of what we're doing, a little more of people talking about it. And then we're going to go into afternoon sessions and start talking about solutions. Brainstorming. What can we do immediately? What can we do in the far future? What can we do that's actually actionable? You know, what's actually doable? You know, so we got to pick things that are doable and that people want to do. And I think, Joe, you can fill in the rest.
Yeah, what Simba's been saying is, We want concrete action plans to emerge from this conference, and people who are willing to actually carry them out. That this will not be another conference in which people say, well, that was a good conversation, now I'm going to go home and do nothing, but rather concrete action plans that can actually be carried out in ways that, and we expect to have at least two concrete strategies for every one of these six areas that people will start implementing. For example, one of the things that we said that we know that's already going to come out because it's already been posed to come out during our time of our hearings, and that is that just having police complaint forms available online and not have to go down to the police station to get a complaint form is a concrete plan for having people to be able to put their stuff out there without feeling like they're putting themselves at risk.
It seems simple.
That there's those kinds of simple plans, but there's also some, and for every one of these six areas, there are concrete things that we'll be able to lift up and say, this county is beginning to take realistically the issue of race and racism and beginning to realize that there is something that needs to be concretely done about it. And we're going to go, every one of the ideas we come up with, we're going to name the people who should implement this. Should it be a city council, a school board, a county board of supervisors, a local community organization, whatever it needs, and then how do we take it to them in very concrete kinds of ways. So concrete action is what people can expect, and concrete participation from the folks who attend is what we expect.
Wonderful. I'll be there.
Good. And tell your friends.
Simba, knowing about some your years of experience in leadership and work in the city of Santa Cruz and in the county, I want to ask you to what you can say about the times we're in with regards to race and racism. I guess what I mean to say is I hope we're building momentum. Every day I'm reminded of just how bad it is and how far we haven't come. But I'm wondering if you see something building with these sessions, building to the conference tomorrow, and the momentum taking us out of here and beyond, that will continue as people discuss these concrete steps forward towards actual solutions and making a plan to confront racism systematically.
Yeah, and right now is a good time because racism on a lot of people's minds because of Obama. And that is a good and bad thing. Because people of color, when we talk about Obama being elected, there's this fear that white Americans are going to go, okay,
done,
we're
man.
All through now. Yeah. Racism's finished. We elected a black man, right. Not knowing that the institutions that were formed back in slavery times or were formed to make white men on top. And we still have that same system. So until we start realizing that and dismantling what was set up not decades, generations ago, not even maybe centuries ago, that we have to look at the systems we set up and learn how to redo them. So that's part of what this conference is about, is trying to look at things and look at it in a different perspective, not look at it as victims, not look at it as a lower class, not look at it as somebody that's on the bottom, but to look at it as an equal citizen, and how, which is really hard. I mean, you wouldn't believe, it's really hard as a person of color to make yourself feel that you're normal, that you're like everybody else. I mean, last night I was looking at people that have my buttons on for the city council. I got the strangest feeling. It was almost like, oh no, now they're going to know who I am. And I know a lot of people have that psychological thing going on, whether they're black, white, or whatever, you know, that, oh God, they're going to discover that I'm not as good as they thought I was, you know. But as a person of color, there is that peace that I really have a heart. It's that hard that it kind of brings me to tears because I can't define it well enough sometimes to, on the outside. But the feeling that you're just not good enough, I guess is the best way I can put it. And I know better than that. I know on how intelligent I am. I know how much leadership skills I have. And I still have that crap that tells me I'm not as good. So it's institutionalized racism. Why we're trying to deal with institutionalized racism is because the effect that it has on people. Because, like I said, prejudice is one thing, but institutionalized racism that tells you every day what you are or what you aren't, this is bothering me a lot more than I thought it would.
That's a powerful statement you just made, Simba, and I imagine that any person of color being called into leadership, whether it be you or Senator Obama, both are facing that kind of thing, that expectations beyond possibility and all of the internalized stuff. That I just really think that the demands on the leadership of we demand the leadership of people of color, and then we put demands on it that are impossible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I've heard people say in discussions about this, and of course in other discussions, as a white person, what would I do at this conference? And so basically, Joe, you're the author of a book subtitled The 21st Century Challenge to White America. One of the simplest concepts that it seems difficult for some to accept is the responsibility of white people ourselves to dismantle racism. It makes perfect sense. It's obvious, but some still seem unable to see what white people can and should do to contribute to the fight to dismantle racism.
Yeah.
So both locally with this conference and in, I guess, in a larger systemic nationwide or societal view, what should white people understand about what y'all are trying to do with this coalition and with this this project?
I that's obviously a question that's very complex to answer in
of course.
Of time. just before I do try and answer that with 2 points, I want to say that in the work that I do, we provide a we say that if people want to understand how systemic racism functions, we need you in the room for 2.5 days for a workshop that we really explicitly and in-depth explore the history and the present functioning of systemic racism so that when you leave, you're equipped to do something. So, but I'd like to say 2 things and in answer to that, and begin with a powerful statement that Simba just made about the history, the historic function of institutions that we have not yet changed. The purpose of racism is to provide power and privilege for white people. It's always been that. That was the reason it came into being. Hurting people of color was the consequence of that. The purpose of racism is to do something for white people. One of the sentences I like to use over and over and over again in a workshop is that every system and every institution in this country was created originally and structured legally and intentionally to serve white people exclusively. And that was true about every institution in this country until the 1960s. And that every institution is designed to serve white people exclusively. And we made such incredible progress in the 60s about changing that intention. And we've made incredible progress in this country in one level, but we have not done, the most important thing we have not yet done is change the structure of those institutions that are still designed to function better for white people than for people of color.
So, yeah, like a lot of times, like then with law enforcement in particular, a lot of times the problem is their policies, not their actions. Well, the actions are a problem too, but the actions come from the policies. So we as citizens that are concerned about racism, sexism, poverty and stuff, we have to defend ourselves and each other, because it the system is set up the way it's set up. So we have to be allies to each other, which is another part of this whole conference and the whole coalition thing, is that we're trying to create allies. Even though we know that there are people that we don't even agree with on 90% of the things, there may be agreement on that 10%, and that's what we're looking for. We're not trying to, undo people. We're trying to redo policies and stuff. So, us working together is very, very important, because that's one thing I want us to realize tomorrow is that we are creating alliances. This isn't just about, these groups to go off to try to fight this particular thing, whether it's in housing, education, whatever, that we are allies and that we know that we're supporting each other even if we're not working on the same things, that we have to have a sense of camaraderie. We have to have that energy from each other, because racism is such a big, overpowering topic that we have to understand that we're in this together. Because I know Joe. I know Joe's going to be there. And I would like to know that about every other white person, that I know he's going to be there, and he's going to be dealing with what I'm dealing with, because he sees it as big of a problem. And one of the other things, though, is that I brought up last night at the meeting, and I want to tell people that are listening that as much as possible, we need to have some fun with this. And I know it's racist, it's a heavy subject, but one of my little sayings is everything that's deep doesn't have to be heavy. So, we are respecting people to come in with the attitude of light, not necessarily lightness, but of light, to come in with that attitude. And I think it would help a lot, because it helps create alliances when you're open like that. You get to feel other people besides hear them. You hear them on a different level. So I think tomorrow should be another thing that we just kind of have a little fun with. There's humor. Sometimes in my life in particular, I have deflected and gotten rid of a lot of things through humor. Because I'm a abuse survivor. So I have developed a sense of humor in my life that has really helped me, because there are times that I really want to cry, like a few minutes ago, and I couldn't even think anything funny to say then. But, it really does help for us to be a little lighter than, would have expected at a conference like this.
Right. The other thing that I want to say to that, Daniel, is that what we white people really need to come, the kind of transformation that we need to go through before we can have that alliance that Simba's talking about, is to realize racism's negative effect on us also, that it's destructive to white people, just as it's destructive to people of color. We get the power and privilege to make us think that racism is just our friend. And when it makes us think that racism is our friend, that's destroying us. That when it separates us from people of color and from the community and from the culture and makes us, it's destroying us too. That we lose through racism, not just gain.
We can't think that there's no cost for that.
The cost is our humanity. And that when we work against racism, we're working to get our own humanity back. And I think that... I think that's just really critical that when Simba talks about getting his humanity back, we got to talk about the same thing, that we've all lost our humanity in this process, and that we've all been dehumanized, and that I'm not just doing this for Simba's sake. I'm doing this also for my sake, to get for me to become human again. And the final thing about that, in terms of what our goal tomorrow is that many people, white people and people of color, want to do something more about racism in our county, and just need to be equipped with an organizing process and with the skills to be able to do something about it. It's for that 10% that Simba's identified. 10% of the people can change the world, but so there's a whole lot of folk. Don't have to call themselves in the majority. The majority of people are not working to end racism in this country. But we who are working can really make a difference, but we've got to equip ourselves and organize so that we can be effective.
I have lots more questions, of course. Like you said, 2.5 days is what we would shoot for. But I know you're both really busy today, and I appreciate you speaking on the Indy Newswire. And I want to thank you both for your time and for your work. I want to ask you both to finish and by saying what people can do to get in touch and stay involved and hear more from the coalition. Some folks might not be able to make it tomorrow. I hope everyone can. Like Simba was saying, I wish it was just a given that everyone would be there. How can listeners who can't make it contribute to the work and follow through on the planning that's going to be done tomorrow? How are people gonna hear and find out what these steps that people have determined, like what's gonna happen after?
You want to take that, Joe?
Well, there's a long term answer and a short term answer for that. I suspect that one of the things that's going to come out of the continuation of this coalition is a website and more publicity and a place to get in touch. We don't have that yet. This is a brand new coalition that doesn't have that. But what we have is phone numbers. Do you want some phone numbers, Daniel, to be put out there?
Sure. For folks listening, grab your pens and get in touch, get in contact. If the program and tomorrow sounds interesting, please come out to Cabrillo College, the Horticulture Building up at the top of campus, starting at 9:30. But for folks who can't make it, here's some ways to get in touch and to contribute and let folks know that even though you may not be able to make the conference, you're on the same page.
Simba, your phone number?
It's area code 831-459-9349. And my email is skenyatta, skenyatta, @cruiseio.com.
And my number, and my name is Joseph Barnd, B-A-R-N-D-T, and my number is 831-763-2104. My email is jbarndt, J-B-A-R-N-D-T, @msn.com. And I'd like to give you one other, and that is Tony Madrigal, who is the initiator of this entire process. And I couldn't say how important it is for Tony to be reelected and Simba to be elected to the Santa Cruz City Council. And Tony's number is 831-295-2518.
Well, I again appreciate your time and willingness to put yourselves out there and put yourselves out there for folks to follow up with and talk to.
Yeah, and publicly, I want to say again, God, why am I crying this morning? But again, I just want to tell Joe how much you're appreciated, because I appreciate what you do, the energy you put into it, the intention that's behind it. I respect it all, and I really love it. I really respect you a lot, Joe, and I appreciate you more than you'll ever know.
Thank you. Thank you, and it's really been great working with you, and I'm looking forward to a whole lot more.
Yeah.
Well, I look forward to seeing you both tomorrow. Childcare will be provided. There's a free lunch. There are speakers and breakout groups. This is all starting at 9:30 a.m., going into the afternoon, going until 3 and perhaps beyond at the Cabrillo Horticultural Building. Tomorrow, October 18th, Saturday, community conference on racism, working towards solutions.
Thank you for having us on, Daniel.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks a lot for having us.
Right on. Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM, Stay tuned. This is the Indie Newswire.